Hi everyone. In my previous episode, we spoke about ways to engage with the environment within and outside of us. We also spoke how we can effectively deal with the present situation with gratitude and compassion. This pandemic has also shown us how we can pave our way through difficult circumstances through grit. Grit is engagement with some activity with a lot of dedication and an equal amount of passion. Research by Angela Duckworth shows that successful people are grittier than their lesser successful counterparts, and that grit can be learnt. But before a person converts grit into success, it is important to have a goal in mind. In a broader sense of the term, meaning and purpose are precursors to a successful life. Meaning and purpose are also an important part of Martin Seligman's model of positive psychology, PERMA, where P is positive emotion, E is engagement, R is relationship, M is meaning and purpose, and A is accomplishment. I will take each one of them in the following episodes of the podcast. The concept of meaning and purpose in life came up in a big way after the World War II in the works of Dr. Viktor Frankl, an Austrian neurologist who was a Nazi camp survivor. Dr. Frankl observed that the fellow prisoners who saw meaning and purpose in their life, even in those difficult times, were more likely to survive the Holocaust. His works cultivated in the famous book Man's Search for Meaning, and they still hold the test of time. But you will be surprised to know that much before the West woke up to these concepts and came up with these theories, our sages had already unlocked the secret to a successful life and recorded it in the form of Vedas and other religious scriptures like the Bhagavatam. And today, to unravel and explore the wisdom of our scriptures and connect them with contemporary psychology, I have with me Ms. Vinita Srivastava. Vinita is presently working as Executive Director, Railway Board, and is engaged with the Heritage Wing of the Indian Railways. Besides being a technocrat, she is deeply involved with the preservation of art and culture. Her keen interest in the field led her deep involvement in putting together a compilation of our scriptures on the IGNCA Vedic Heritage Portal while she was posted there. Hi Vinita, welcome to Chasing Sunshine. It is a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much, Jaya. It's really awesome to be here with you and Chasing Sunshine.
So you are a mechanical engineer by profession, and yet you have such in-depth knowledge of our religious scriptures. This is a beautiful combination. Please tell us something about this.
That is true, Jaya. You and I studied in a convent school and I went on to do mechanical engineering, where certainly a formal knowledge of the scriptures was not an academic requirement. However, I think every Indian family is blessed with usually one or two elderly relatives. They would have studied and imbibed the scriptures in a very experiential way into their own lives. So the disposition towards that learning, which came from a habit of maybe lighting a diya every evening or performing a quick mental prayer before you prepare for challenges in your life, all of that orients you towards a learning of what the scriptures contain. Certainly, our family particularly was blessed with Sanskrit scholars and knowledgeable elders. And more recently, my work on the Vedic Heritage Portal in the IGNCA helped to have a more formal understanding of the structure and the kinds of books which form the body of work known as the Vedic scriptures. I think that every time the family unit, which is so essential for India, and it is there to encourage us to follow and explore this wealth that our ancestors have left us. Every time we follow that path a little bit, we do get a disposition towards the code of conduct that our scriptures prescribe. And this is true irrespective of any religion. I think that whenever the family unit is intact, the elders will advise the youngsters and the youngsters will move forward in this direction. We were no different.
We were no different. You are so right, Vinita. I think we were blessed with the best of both the worlds. A convent education with lessons in altruism and our families deeply rooted in the rich cultural heritage of India. The listeners will surely agree that our life is so much shaped by the silent observations of our growing up years. For many of us, finding meaning and purpose in life is a lifelong quest. At least I can say for myself, it took me a long time to realize how I can meaningfully engage in life. Let me take you back to your childhood, Vinita. Were you very clear about your career path since the very beginning, or you entered the profession first and then grew a fondness for it?
Wow, that is a thought-provoking one, Jaya. And to the first part of that, it is so wonderful that you've distilled that sense of meaning and purpose into a podcast, Chasing Sunshine, that helps people who are facing stress or mental health issues. It's a wonderful initiative, and all my compliments to you. To the second part of that, you and I schooled and high school in the 90s when I don't think our generation had very clear career ideas. It was generally, if you were doing well at studies, you were steered towards medicine or engineering because those were stable, well-paying careers. At that point in time, there were no aptitude tests to tell me that I would find more passion or meaning in one particular stream. However, when I look back today at more than two decades of my work in the government as a railway woman and in various ministries, steel, industries, culture, I have to say this, the opportunities, the leadership, the variety of roles which a government job in India offers you is certainly unmatched. You're not slotted right away as a banker, engineer. You can choose the roles more or less. You can't choose your bosses, certainly. And I have essayed the roles to the best of my ability, intend to do that in future. I must say one more thing for all our listeners. A career doesn't have to be the only thing that gives you meaning and purpose in life. Your hobbies, your interests, whoever needs you most at the moment, maybe a family that needs sustenance, children who need your nurturing, parents who want you for your companionship and care. I think all of it adds so many layers of meaning to life.
Thanks so much, Vinita. I feel this podcast is also an expression of all like-minded people who feel that mental health and issues like stress, anxiety, and depression need to be addressed as much as issues related to physical health. Apart from reaching out to people who need help, this podcast is also a conscious effort to remove the stigma attached to seeking help for mental well-being. But let me take you back to man's search for meaning, where Dr. Frankl has spoken at length about freedom and will to choose our actions in any situation, and existentialism. Is there a similar concept in our scriptures too?
The short answer to that is yes, of course. Dr. Viktor Frankl is a psychologist who was the founder of logotherapy, and he worked in the 1940s in Nazi concentration camps. counseling the victims of the Holocaust who had faced immeasurable grief in their lives. And if we put that into the context, Europe after the war, and then we look at the second part of your question, which is about Hindu scriptures. It is comparing apples to oranges. Hindu scriptures, four Veds, the 18 Purans, Ramayana, Mahabharata, the 108 Upanishads, the systems of philosophy, treatises on economics. There is absolutely no Western thought, old or new, which can contain new knowledge that is not found in our scriptures. It's a personal opinion, but I will hold on to that. These oral compilations of distilled wisdom have come to the Indian spiritual tradition from time immemorial. And we can find things there to inspire the most grieved and difficult individual and the worst circumstances. If you go over that triangle of meaning, right on top is self-transcendence through spirituality. And Indian scriptures are a path to spirituality. As a footnote to that, I'd like to add, no single person in one lifetime can claim to have mastered all of our scriptures. But I like to write down two or three Sanskrit lines whenever they seem to hold very deep meaning to me. I'd like to share one of them. Ashtadash Puraneshu Vyasaya Vachanam Dvayam Paropkaraya Punyaya Papaya Parpeedanaya. And so that means that in the 18 Puranas, Ashtadash Puraneshu, Vyasaya Vachanam Dvayam, only two lines of Vyas have condensed wisdom. Paropkaraya Punyaya, so helping others is Punya or good. And Papaya Parpeedanaya, it is bad to hurt people. In that very narrow and simplistic definition, if we can find meaning in our lives, I'm sure we are on a good path.
You're absolutely right, Vinita. It's difficult to compare the Western and the Indian philosophies. There may be some underlying common principles. However, I feel that Western philosophy is more individualistic in nature, whereas Indian philosophy, as rightly pointed out by you, is a culmination of years of learnings passed from one generation to another. You have beautifully summed up how we can find meaning in life by adopting a two-pronged approach of helping people and abstaining from hurting others. And impulse control plays a vital role when we talk about both the approaches. In fact, Walter Mitchell's famous marshmallow experiment with Stanford's four-year-olds was about the importance of impulse control as a predictor of success. I feel all of us need a lesson or two on this. And here I remember a shloka in Bhagavatam, which goes something like this. Yatha dhenu sahasreshu vatso vindati mataram tatha purvakritam karmam kartar manugachati. Just as a calf can find its mother in a herd of thousands of cows, your karmas follow you in every birth you take. But it also means that one's deeds decide one's karmas. Whatever we do doesn't go unnoticed, good or bad. The best way to control your karmas is to control your deeds. So karmas and deeds, they appear to be two different concepts. And what is the role of impulse control in all this?
I'll begin by sharing about a person who has solved a lot of these mysteries for me. He happens to be my paternal uncle, my father's elder brother. His name is Kotamraza Narayan Rao, and he is a teacher of astrology in the Bhartiya Vidya Bhavan, very close to the center of Delhi. Every year at the Hindu New Year, the convocation of their astrology class, he gives only one lecture. For the last decade, that lecture has been on karma, the theory of karma as per Hindu philosophy. Now, let me switch back to what you said about Walter Mitchell. And I have to say that once again, apples and oranges come up. Impulses and their control in the Stanford experiment on four-year-olds illustrates a point, yes, that we learn rather early to control our impulses for a delayed gratification. And that has led to many more of his teachings and personalities and how to classify people according to the way they control themselves, the way they work towards goals. All very fine. When you switch to karma theory in the Hindu spiritual tradition of India, we begin with a deep understanding of Jyotisha, astrology, which says that your past life deeds influence you in the current life. And they divide karma into three categories. Sanchit karma, what has been accumulated in the past life. Prarabdha, which is the portion that you must, in your present birth, it is the accumulated karma and it's been allotted for you. And Kriyaman karma is what we actually do, the decision and the deeds. So that's the difference. Translating it in English sometimes robs it of meaning. And so I'll read a very tiny paragraph from his book, Karma and Rebirth in Hindu Astrology, which explains this little piece well. This is the result of sanskaras of previous life. Human life is therefore the story of prarabdha and motivations for which belief in the effect of the environment or heredity have no valid explanation. Human behavior is molded by four factors: environment, heredity, prarabdha, and the motivations. These motivations have origins in our past lives. And therefore, when a person does all his prarabdha and the karma without any sense of extreme happiness or extreme sadness, without grumbling, and he doesn't force himself out of the situations facing him and doesn't create more meshes of karma for his future lives, he is able to avert his prarabdha and also is able to do good to cut out the balance of sanchit karma in his previous lives. In summary, for an easier understanding, impulses are yours to control. Motivations and circumstances are not always your own to control. But very truly, and this is where both thoughts converge, your responses to the situation are certainly what you can control. And the good that a good response does for that situation, Hindu philosophy assures us that it will be noticed not just in this life but in the future as well.
Beautifully summed up, Vinita. Our scriptures lay down ways to find meaning and purpose in life so well. Gita lays a lot of importance on karma, that is action, without any desire for the outcome. Whereas psychologists in the West talk about seeking positive outcomes in a situation. And the end result of both the approaches to a layman appear the same, which is happiness. I wonder if there is a relationship between the two.
Well, I'm sure all our listeners know about the Bhagavad Gita. It's a Sanskrit text with 700 verses. And the one we're talking about here is the verse from chapter 2 of the Gita. Karmanye vadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phal hetur bhuma te sangostva karmani. It's gained popularity also because it is the opening song of the Mahabharata serial. Loosely translated, that verse means, and Swami Vivekananda has given it in a very short and crisp phrase, to work you have all the right, but not to the fruit thereof. And so selfless action is the right path. That's what we derive from the Gita. Now, if we go to the psychology and the theoretics of motivations and positive outcomes, the closest link and relation can be found in the theory of when you negotiate the path from pro-social behavior to benevolence, and finally to true or pure altruism. So pro-social behavior is there to uphold certain laws and codes of conduct and the societal fabric in general. Benevolence is out of kindness and empathy, and then altruism is completely selfless. There is a relationship, yes, but the depth and the meanings and the context is different. And of course, I have to say that the Bhagavad Gita in its 700 verses has traversed so many topics of familial love, society, ethics, duty, the temptation to, between good and evil. And it is a dialogue between the mentor, Lord Krishna, and Arjuna on the battlefield. And Krishna is advising Arjuna on the course of action which is correct. And he wants to know why. The dialogue is containing great depths of meaning, and it has itself given many interpretations. A psychologist can accordingly draw inspiration from the verses of the Gita, and I'm sure that whoever is counseled in accordance with those verses will eventually find things which release stress and anxiety and give reassurance that one has done the right thing. As a footnote to that, I have to add an episode from my childhood. My two younger brothers constantly fighting with each other, and when they ended up in fisticuffs, one or the other would get hurt. So mom one day gave a little stick in the hands of each one of them and said, "Ab tum log lad lo," meaning like, you guys now go ahead and fight each other and don't come to me. And they were supremely shocked, because here's this mother always trying to separate their fights, and now she's actually giving them the weapon and implement to hurt each other with. And the reaction was amazing. They sort of dropped those little sticks to the side and were very chastened. And then they, after half an hour, went to my mom and said, "Look, we won't fight, and don't misunderstand us. We actually like this because it gives us a bit of a workout." And the elder one said, "Look, I'm the more stronger and the more powerful, but I'll make sure not to hurt this little one when we engage in a little dangal with each other." This conversation, this whole episode, and my mom working on a very Gita type of strategy with these two rascals, it sort of elevated their consciousness and their understanding of what they were doing almost daily to a different level. The same cycle going on, but they were more aware, more caring, and my mom wasn't worried, completely frantic about their getting hurt. The lovely thing about a text like the Bhagavad Gita is how any verse, any page, you can simply open and find something useful to absorb, apply, and integrate into your daily life. It does elevate you to a different level. So anybody who's suffering with any kind of stress in this period, it's a lovely recommendation to read a few verses of the Gita every day.
That's a beautiful peep into your childhood, Vinita. This small anecdote shows how we draw correlations between the past and the present. Selfless action and pure altruism, to a certain extent, are related with each other. But you have so rightly pointed out that the concept of selfless action from Bhagavad Gita and other related concepts have much more depth in them. You have spoken about pro-social behavior, benevolence, and altruism. This largely appears to be related to our beliefs we imbibe in our growing up years. Can you tell us something more about this?
Very often, Jaya, we talk about cultures. So they've lost their culture, or people who are going abroad have got a disconnect with Indian culture. In this context, I'd like to bring up an understanding of the iceberg model of culture. Sounds interesting. How is iceberg connected with the culture. And actually, a gentleman called Edward Hall in the 1970s came up with this model where like an iceberg floats on water and only 1/6 of it is above the surface of the water, the tip. But that's why you say tip of the iceberg, and the lower part of it is all submerged. In the same way, the internal aspects of culture, like our unconscious beliefs, which are difficult to change, all our subjective knowledge, which is implicitly learned and imbibed as we grow, all of those values and thought patterns that underlie the behavior, those are the hidden parts of cultural beliefs and values which are not really visible on the surface. And so this, if you imagine all our cultural content in the nature of an iceberg, to learn the internal cultures of people whom we meet from different countries, different continents, the overt behaviors should not be given as much attention. The food they eat, the clothes they wear, that overt behavior is just the tip of the iceberg. What's beneath it and the shared values that come up when we get to know individuals, when we interact them and we uncover the behavior of that society, we go down into the water and check out how deep that iceberg really is and what all it encompasses, then it's easier to understand and to connect between cultures.
This is so interesting, Vinita, and it gives us a lot of food for thought. The social milieu and conduct of a particular population is so much a reflection of their shared values and belief system. But let me bring you back to the present. These are stressful times for all of us. How are you coping with the situation around you? And what are your go-to activities besides work to keep you in a positive frame of mind?
These are stressful times, they're unusual times. They are times to change habit and times to rediscover yourself and others around you. So my go-to activities, the favorite ones I can count are listening to books on Audible. I switch from reading because I don't want to buy too many books and then not have time to read them. And Audible is a lovely app which allows you to have those books read aloud to you whenever you wish. You can stop at chapters. My kids and my husband have switched to Kindle, but I like the book being read aloud to me. I've also picked up a lot of watercolor and oil painting, some things I used to dabble in many years ago. And it's given me great sustenance, a lot of patience, and art allows you to express yourself. The third thing is our family go-to activity is board games, whether it's an online board game like Ludo or sitting at a table playing something, discussing our day. Work from home or going to office in COVID times is challenging. But I think with all these tools to reconnect and bond as a family, it's been a very, very different but engaging time for us.
Wow, Vinita. Family activities are a beautiful way to engage and provide strength to each other during this time. And I really admire your Facebook page, Art Corona, where you are recording all your paintings during this period. A lot of my listeners are young people. What is the message you want to give them regarding how they can find meaning and purpose in life, especially in times like these?
Oh, that's so relevant right now, Jaya. I have two teenagers, one a CBSE class 12 student who's exams were suspended because of lockdown. Another one in class 10th who's rather happy that the syllabus has just been announced, that it's shortened a little bit. Bottled up at home, a little bit of online classes, but not going out, not being able to order food, not meeting friends. I think the youngsters have had to cope far much more than what we have had to. And my sympathy, my heart goes out to them. At the same time, they have adapted so quickly with the help of technology. Right now, my younger daughter is helping me compile all our photos into digital albums. That was something I could never have gotten around to myself. My elder daughter is picking up recipes off the internet of all these Starbucks lemon loaf or some pulisu recipe from Andhra kitchen, which she borrowed from her grandmother. You are locked up, yes, in the four walls of your home. But as we think and remember, we're far more fortunate than so many others to have a roof and a safe and comfortable place to be inside. So let's celebrate that. My advice to the youngsters is to celebrate that, to enjoy that, to live with the lockdown and the curtailments on their freedom a little bit, to believe that times will change and to make the most of this. That's about all the advice bottled up into a few words.
That's wonderful advice, Vinita. Our conversation today has some beautiful takeaways. Right from looking at meaning and purpose in life beyond one's career, to looking at meaningful ways to engage within the constraints of the lockdown, you have given the listeners some wonderful ways to go about their life, which become all the more relevant during this pandemic. I also hope that today's conversation has sparked some interest in the minds of our young listeners about our rich scriptures. Thank you so much for chasing sunshine with me.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely to share thoughts with you. And a very, very warm goodbye to all your listeners. Bye.
You may give your feedback on the Instagram handle of the podcast, which is chasingsunshine_podcast, or DM me and follow it for an update on more episodes. Stay positive and stay happy.